we need to move from the system of a completely fictional consumer choice to a system that deals with how businesses behave.
Hi, I'm Ed Meyer, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations between policy experts, elected officials, and local business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable health care. On this episode, we talk about the state of consumer privacy reform with Brookings visiting fellow Cameron Carey. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Cam, thank you so much for joining us today. You know, I know you've written a lot about this problem with privacy, and you've written about how it's getting worse. And I want us to start out today by you explaining the problem, explaining why it's getting worse, and kind of let our listeners understand that context.
Well, thanks, Ed, and it's good to be here. You know, we have experienced really over the past 20 years in particular, but longer if you go back to the internet era, a data Big Bang. We've always had computers, but now they are all connected by the internet. That is all over the world. That is high-speed data connections. And then on top of that, you get mobile phones. We are all carrying computers around all of the time that are tracking us, that are have sensors that are emitting all sorts of data that store information about our entire lives. And of course, you have now as well the cloud. So all of us in businesses are all storing far more information. So all of that is doubling every 2 years. We are just at an inflection point in the curve of the amount of information in the world. And a lot of that is personal information about all of us. And it is just beyond the ability of individuals to control. You know, even if you pay attention to the settings on your phone, to the privacy settings on the apps and the services that you use, even if you occasionally click on those consent boxes and try to look at privacy policies, even the most sophisticated power operator can manage all of that information flow. And, you know, at this point, I mean, there are, through technologies that serve us, advertising, through the apps that use Facebook, use app stores, and the development tools, there's a lot of leakage of information. I mean, that's what we saw in the Cambridge Analytica scandal. Was, you know, developers, researchers using Facebook were able to get access to all kinds of information about millions of Americans. And that's just playing out in many, many ways.
Well, let's talk about those privacy settings a little more. I mean, let's be honest. I'm an attorney. I'm reasonably sophisticated, former attorney, reasonably sophisticated, but I never read terms and conditions before accepting them and all the little accept cookie things that pop up when you're just trying to get to the information you want. So how do we move forward toward a digital economy where consumers understand that relationship between data and what the companies are collecting? How do we think about, you know, moving some of that responsibility for data protection from the individuals like myself to the companies? What's the what should that relationship look like around terms and conditions and notice and consent and all that stuff?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, Ed, by saying we need to move the responsibility off of individuals and onto the companies that are collecting and using the data and understand it. You know, most of our existing privacy laws are based on this system of notice and consent. That's why we get those boxes that you click and you don't read, and then nobody reads. I mean, you know, people have calculated that the average person would have to spend hundreds of hours a year to read all the privacy policies for all the websites and all the services that they use. That's just an impossible burden. So we need to move from the system of a completely fictional consumer choice to a system that deals with how businesses behave. So to have laws that put some boundaries around the collection of data, how that data is used, how long it's kept, and how it is shared.
And during the Obama administration, you managed the creation of the Consumer Privacy Bill of Rights. Is that a framework that we can work with? Is there a new framework? Help us think through the right frameworks.
Well, I think it is a starting point. I think the idea of that was to take some well-developed, well-accepted principles for using information, the so-called fair information practice principles, but update them from things that were oriented around mainframe computers to the era that we live in today with user-generated information and, an increasing number of smart devices, sensors out there in the environment that are generating data about people. But I think, to be honest, the discussion sort of already moved beyond where those principles were a few years ago, and I think needs to address more specifically the kinds of boundaries that I talked about. I think those were kind of there at the time, but they need to be clearer today.
So we seem to be in a world now where there's not much that unites the people on the sort of far left and the far right and the middle, but it seems that a general fear and distrust of big tech, frankly, seems to be something that you were seeing more and more of. And yet every day, most of us still go on Facebook and we all Google and all of these tech companies we love and we rely on in many ways, but there's also this concern about our privacy. I guess the question is, right now, is there a moment where politically we can find some sort of bipartisan consensus on some of the rules that you're talking about? Is this a unique moment in time where people from, liberals and conservatives and everyone in between could actually come together on a big bipartisan bill, perhaps?
So I'd like to believe that it is, Ed, and I'm hopeful on that. I think one of the striking things that I've seen on this issue over the past couple of years since the Cambridge Analytica scandal is the extent to which members of Congress have really engaged on this, members of Congress on both aisles and kind of across a spectrum. So I've certainly seen the learning curve among members of Congress on the key committees go way up. And there's been a lot of effort, particularly in the Senate, to work on a bipartisan bill. And we have Senator Wicker, the chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee from Mississippi, and Senator Cantwell is the ranking Democratic member from the state of Washington, who have been working together on a bill along with some of the other committee leaders. They're not there yet in terms of having a single bipartisan bill, but they've both put out drafts that have a lot of overlap. There's some important points of difference, some tough issues to work out. But I will tell you, I've been having a lot of conversations, not just with people on Capitol Hill, but some of the companies and the privacy advocates who are involved in these issues. And I think I do think there's a way for people to come together even on some of these very difficult issues like, private lawsuits for privacy violations.
And Jim, what are you seeing from your work with business leaders around the country? I know you work with, local and medium and big business leaders from really all 50 states. What are you hearing from concerned business folks on the privacy issue?
A few things. The first is a pivot from a world where they recognized that notice and consent could work to one where they think it's time for affirmative duties and obligations to be put on the big companies. Second is that they're very aware of the fact that big companies can avoid responsibility by working with smaller partners that do the sleazy things and pay the bigger companies the money. I think they're very focused on making sure that it's a tech-neutral law that captures everybody. And then the last thing, it was a bit of a surprise, is small business leaders understand the problem of 50 state rules. So they tend to be more in favor of a national standard than 50 different standards because they just don't feel like they would have the capacity to deal with that if they, as a small business. So I think using those points, what are some of the affirmative obligations you think could be put in place? How do we make sure that we capture everybody? And is a national standard viable in Congress?
So I'll answer the last question first. Yeah, I think that it is. I think part of that, though, is going to take setting the bar high enough. I mean, certainly the California Consumer Privacy Act has, in some sense, set the bar because it's such a large part of the country. And In addition to that, a very large part of the Democratic caucus in the House, including the Speaker of the House, come from California. So they are going to look out for California's interest. But I would say the bills I'm seeing out of the Senate Commerce Committee will be stronger than California's bill. You know, that's mostly about the sale of data to third parties and giving people the right to opt out of that, and the giving people the right to get access to information and the right to delete that data, to make corrections if there are errors. I think those things are important, but that's really still all about consent and consumer choice. What California doesn't do is put boundaries on business behavior. So I think, you know, what should those be? Limiting the collection to what people really need.
And by people, you mean the businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And limiting the uses of that data to those purposes and making sure that if it's shared with other people, that it's subject to agreements, contracts that will ensure that whatever those limits are, they stay with the data. So it doesn't get passed on to somebody else who can do whatever they want with it.
And just to use an example, so if someone were giving information to try to produce their family tree, they don't need to hand over their location information 24/7. So if the app is trying to collect their location data, then that's out of context. Therefore, that would be the kind of usage that would be prevented from happening.
That's exactly right.
And then I think the third part would be, going back to the national standard, the trade-off. I think the way you've sort of explained it, I think, is fascinating. Data doesn't know borders.
Well, and the fact that it doesn't know borders is one more reason why we need legislation. I mean, you know, Europe has set to a very high standard. We have an agreement that enables data flows, but that's a source of tension and under challenge in the European courts. The more we can have high standards of how we protect personal information in the United States, the less we have to worry about those tensions. And on top of that, the more American businesses will be trusted abroad. The brand of America and American businesses took a big hit with the Snowden revelations and then the Cambridge Analytica standard. And you know, look, we've got a great history in this country. We've got a constitution that's one of the first laws that to protect privacy, and a history of doing that from the founding of the Republic and some of the first laws on privacy adopted anywhere. American companies ought to be able to go out in the world and be trusted by people. We ought to reaffirm those values that are really an important part of, you know, our culture, our thought.
And as the burden shifts from, hopefully, in the new law that might be passed from the consumers to business, do you see, you know, sort of all businesses taking on the same responsibility, big and small, or do you see a differentiated sort of burden, I guess, on those businesses based on their size?
No, I do see a differentiated burden, yeah. I mean, I think on a basic level, all businesses should have to take privacy into account, should have to recognize the reality of today, that an enormous amount of information that might not have your name or your social security number is still sensitive personal information. Take location data. You can take a data set of location and figure out who it is based on where they live and where they go. All of that needs to be taken into account. So any company needs to think about, what data are we collecting? Why are we collecting? What are we using it for? How are we going to protect it? So some basic duty to do that and take into account privacy risks. But then I think there are lots of other aspects of this that need to scale according to how large the business is. So when you get to something like consumer rights of access, of correction, of deletion, or data portability in particular, a tremendous amount of back-end engineering work that goes into designing those interfaces. Same thing for consent forms. Literally billions of dollars were spent complying with the European General Data Protection Regulation and with the California law. So you don't want to impose those regulatory obligations on everybody. And then I think there's some other things at an even higher scale, collecting a mass of data and using machine learning to make decisions and affect people's lives, then, you know, there's some higher burdens that ought to apply. The common examples are a mortgage application. We've had a Fair Credit Reporting Act since 1970, but now with FinTech, there are sort of lots of new ways of making decisions about that. And, some of those things are very valuable because they can extend credit to people who may be unbanked. For some of that, you need to have at least a human in the loop to make sure that you're getting the results that you want, that it's not working some kind of discrimination or unfairness. Same thing with insurance. All of these things have potentially significant impact on people's lives.
When you started working with President Obama on the Bill of Rights, you faced a lot of resistance. A lot of your recommendations were dismissed out of hand by Republicans in the Senate. A few years later, and those Republicans are now willing to consider those. It's the result of the risk rising. It's the result of a lot of hard work from privacy advocates. Mm-hmm. So, the fact that there's a bipartisan path here, that's something that people really need to understand. That's the result of a lot of hard work.
Hard work, it's the result of events. I mean, I'll tell you, Jim, it's not just Republicans. Democrats saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Some of them now have their names on bills. I think people have woken up to the data explosion, and that includes people on Capitol Hill and includes Republicans and Democrats. I mean, they are consumers. They're facing the same bewilderment, all of those consent boxes and wondering what happens to their data and the sense of frustration of not having control of it. And they've got children and grandchildren to be concerned about. So it's been a sort of real transformation. And I got to tell you, I'm impressed and pleased by the degree to which some of the Republicans, are really kind of leaning into issues of how to deal with this. I think, they've had to kind of deal with some of their members saying, wait, this is government regulation. We're against that. But I think, the events, the tech lash, the recognition that we've somehow got to get our arms around this vast explosion of data has changed the discussion.
Let's flash forward and hopefully we get a bill and the bill passes and signed and becomes law. Given the tech lash and given the unpopularity of Congress and really the unpopularity of Washington, how do we build that trust again with the American consumers? Like, do you see that as being easy or hard? Does there need to be a big trust building campaign, I guess, that goes into this after a bill is actually passed?
Well, I think it's a matter of time. I mean, the passage of a law is not going to just change the way that people think about things. But I think there will be some adaptation. I mean, I think, we look at the European experience. The Europeans adopted this massive general data protection regulation, which builds on their prior laws, but really doubled down on it in some very visible ways. I mean, to the extent that, even here in the United States, as that was coming into effect going on 2 years ago, lots of us were getting sort of new consents and new information and new privacy policies based on Europe's so-called GDPR. And I think all of that sort of built awareness, and I think people in Europe do have a sense, hey, we've got this higher standard of protection. I think there'd be some of the same process of education here, but certainly I think it will be on companies implementing it to communicate the changes and how this means that they can be trusted with people's data.
One question for you, it's a bit in the weeds, and our small business leaders talk about it a fair bit. It's the private cause of action, which would allow consumers to sue individual companies for breaches of data. Could you explain what that is? And when our business leaders hear about it, they get worried that they're going to get sued. They're concerned about it. What is it, and it, should it be part of a bipartisan deal?
So, that's probably the biggest gulf between the Republicans and the Democrats. I mean, if you look at the Democratic bill in the Senate, it says that individuals have a right to sue for damages based on violations of the act. And, there are damages spelled out if you don't prove something different. So I think it's $100 to $1,000 a violation. And there was nothing in there that limits the ability to bring class actions. So, and I think that's the biggest fear in the business community, because, the nuisance value of cases goes way up. You end up paying a lot of attorney's fees to class action lawyers, and the downside there is often they do better than the consumers involved. There are private rights of action under a lot of laws, including some existing privacy laws, Fair Credit Reporting Act, for one example. There are a lot of state unfair and deceptive practice laws that state attorneys general enforce, many of which have private rights of action. So people do face those for privacy violations today. I think the questions, to my mind, are sort of, how do we cabin that so we're dealing with violations that really matter? I mean, if somebody's economically damaged, I mean, even the sort of most conservative view is, look, if there's financial injury, you ought to be able to sue. Let's have recovery for financial damage. If, you have identity theft and somebody gets into your bank accounts, you ought to be able to get compensation. And then I think we need to think about, what are these other really serious violations? I mean, revenge porn. Should somebody be able to sue for that? I mean, that sounds right to me. But I think it needs to be designed in a way so you don't get gotcha lawsuits. I mean, there are plenty of class actions that involve sort of technical violations. That's sometimes come up under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the TCPA. I can't remember what the initials stand for, but that's been a common one dealing with robocalls.
And if it's not a private right of action, you've also got some help from the state attorneys general as
well. Yes, that's pretty much an accepted part of the discussion. Every proposal that I've seen has state attorney generals being allowed to sue to enforce the federal law. So, there are other force multipliers available. I think the private right of action also dovetails with issues about the preemption of state law. I mean, does federal law displace state law? We've got, 130 years of sort of state privacy law that's common law and statutes that have developed. And we need to sort of figure out what stays, what goes. I don't think some of the proposals that I've seen, a federal law that just sort of says, wipe out any state law. I don't think anybody would want to wipe out laws against intrusion on your home. There's a violation of privacy, which is sort of part of the traditional privacy rights that have been around for generations.
I'm going to ask you the question I always hate at the end of an interview that someone will ask me, and that's, is there anything else we need to know about this big, hairy issue of privacy law that I haven't asked you, or we haven't asked you today, that our listeners might want to know about, or should know about?
How long do we have, Ed? No, look, I think this is a moment. We have an important opportunity. This is something that makes a difference to everybody. Literally everybody in America has connected online in this day and age. And that's a reason, I think that Congress may get something done on this. I think, look, we know how polarized Congress is and how dysfunctional our politics can be. But I think in this moment that both parties have an incentive to show that they can get something done. And this is something where they can get something done for every single American.
Wouldn't that be amazing? That'd be great. Well, thank you for your time with us today. And we want to thank all of you that are listening to our podcast. Until next time, we thank you again, Cam Carey and Jim Doyle. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Ed Meyer, and Jim Doyle. Produced and engineered by Alexia Lipman and Alex Passanen. Special thanks to our Director of Programming, Jana Platt. Thank you for listening. See you next time.